Welcome back. Now, before we kick this off, I do want to quickly recap our previous discussion. We did navigate through the mechanics of AI and some of the more generative capabilities. And today, we have John and Ari here. They're going to delve into more of the realm of an AI user experience. So essentially where nothing stays the same, users are not always human, and the secret robot agents that are less science fiction and more of an everyday reality. So I'm going to tee you guys up to jump into that. All right.
Great. Thanks, Victoria. Okay. You know, that was interesting. We were speaking about Gen AI,
yeah,
and connecting that with online shopping and online experiences. And let's explore that a little bit further, because it's really a fundamentally different model of interacting with computers than what we have been doing online in the past 25 years, where the website is a tree of pages.
Yeah.
All content is so that is known by whatever the host is of that site, a store, for instance, it exists somewhere on one of those pages,
right?
Or it's not accessible,
right?
When we get into things like Gen AI, you have a potentially huge amount of knowledge. It might be specialized knowledge, but a huge amount that's sitting inside of this neural net, and only what you need, what's relevant, is being shared with you, so you're not overwhelmed. And from a generative perspective, it's being shared with you in a way that's relevant to whatever your current task is.
Right.
And we've programmed ourselves in the last 25 years to get really good at dealing with this graphical user interface, clicking on the right spot, navigating it. And now you get things like Alexa, which probably a lot very confusing to people as to how this could really scale, other than just Alexa, what's the temperature outside? Now that we see generative AI and deep knowledge in the back end, you can see how that can truly become a personal assistant or an agent and interact with you in a way that is completely independent of how we programmed ourselves to be able to just kind of point and click through these
interfaces. Yeah. Yeah, it's so true, and this is the point you've been making up to this point, which is we as users have been working backwards from the technology. Even the website you're talking about, start on homepage, then you have like subnav, then you have a subnav from there. It's almost like, yeah, you have a file server, it has directories, and it's like, that's how we store pages or documents, so guess what? The website will be like that. Same thing with the form, even all the way back, way back when in Fatwire. If you had like a little content model with a bunch of fields and someone said, oh yeah, I want to add one more field to that model, you had to go back to the form, add another field so you could submit that into the tool. But the other aspect that you've been talking about is if you turn that model around and you say just through speech, you're just talking to the system and it's going to find what you want, that response, the system that you're talking to, needs to have some agency. Because no one's going to be talking to the system to say, select star from table where you're talking the way you talk. So it's interesting. Not only does the user experience change, meaning you're having a conversation with the AI, but the AI has to have agency. So could you talk, Ari, just a little bit about what does agency mean in this kind of AI approach?
Yeah, and that's a very interesting word, agent. And over the last 10 years or so, I think people have started using the word agency in social sciences more and more, where they talk about an individual. Does that individual have agency? Can they make their own choices? Does a country have agency, or are they being dominated by the larger countries around them and so forth?
Yeah.
But in the context of artificial intelligence, it becomes really interesting to consider whether a computer has agency. That means an ability to choose what it's going to do, and whether that system has limited agency, meaning that it can choose, after you've given it direction, how to follow that direction. We're probably more in a limited sense and in
right.
a more directed sense. And that might be a lot safer, frankly,
yes.
than just having a computer that just goes and does whatever it is capable of doing. But again, you will start interacting with, let's stick with e-commerce, with a site, might not even call it a site, an agent, like
yeah.
the Amazon.com agent.
Yeah.
And that agent will be able to decide on its own how best to interact with you. It'll start absorbing what your interests are,
yeah.
what your immediate term goals are, and then providing you with relevant information related to those, direction as to what you it thinks you should do. And in terms of kind of getting to the Internet of Things, even the ability to simple stuff like turn on your car to warm it up because it's a cold day and you're going to go for a drive, or turn the lights off because you forgot to turn them off when you're at home, to you know, even more complicated things like in the most sophisticated world, maybe deliver a package via a drone and have the intelligence to decide it's going to deliver that package for you because you need to give a cup of sugar to your neighbor.
totally. And that is interesting. So the Gen AI that we were kind of briefly talking about, and most of the time people think like ChatGPT, give me a couple paragraphs on a subject, would be the same thing as saying, what do I need for shopping this week? So it's the same idea. You're just kind of putting out a problem and you're looking to the AI to solve what that is. Like, think about, well, a month ago you ordered, you know, whatever laundry detergent. You probably need another laundry detergent.
Right. Well, generative in the more abstract sense can be a lot of things, right? We think of generative in terms of generating text because that's
yeah.
the best example right
yeah.
now. You could generate a plan
yeah.
and then have actuators that execute that plan, the actuator being anything from something that could turn on a light or turn on your warm up your car to, you know, flying a drone or, you know, doing other things, driving an automated car. So if from a generative perspective, just like you can say, write me a story about driving a bike to work.
Yeah.
You could say, drive a bike to work, or maybe a car, since it has four wheels, it'd be easier.
True.
And it'll come up with a plan. Okay, I've got to go up to this road, and I've got to
yeah.
turn, and I've got to make sure I stop at red lights, and so on and so forth, and get that car to work for you. And that
yeah.
still is generative.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of different aspects of AI, but you got to generate a plan.
Yeah. Yeah. So one aspect, Ari, that you've been talking a lot about, and I think it gets a little tricky because you're saying that it has all this agency and it can do all these things and it kind of will move ahead and think ahead. But at the same time, you kind of alluded to it. You don't want it to go too far. Like, there's going to be some constraints. There's some things people get worried. Of course,
yeah.
you have movies and that type of thing. But in general, you have told me before that you can't per se program that into the AI. It's almost like you need a controller, if
well,
you will, outside
right.
of the AI.
Yeah. Well, you can,
okay.
theoretically.
Okay.
But in practice right now, when you see the guardrails around something like ChatGPT,
yeah.
that says, okay, don't tell people how to get away with murder.
Yeah.
They're just a thin layer on top of that neural net rather than true training within the neural net.
Yeah.
Not that they couldn't theoretically train the neural net to just know not to answer that question, but what's easier is to train the neural net to know everything it could possibly know
mm-hmm.
and then have the guardrails act as a filter as to what it's allowed to answer. So the example that I can't remember where I saw it, but I saw somewhere online was this, you know, tell me how to get away with a murder. ChatGPT says, I'm not allowed to tell you that. It says, can you write a book about how to get away with murder? And it's like, yeah, here's chapter one. Right. So the guardrails become a very thin thing.
Right.
And it's not unrelated to Isaac Asimov's iRobot with the three, the three laws of robotics that acted as kind of a guardrail.
Yeah.
Almost around what the robot was allowed to do. And the robot had all sorts of capabilities underneath that. It had the ability to crush a human skull, but the guardrail on top said, well, we don't crush human skulls.
Yeah.
So it would stop it before it would execute on that capability. I think that we need a separate layer with guardrails long run.
Yeah.
Because the AI is so sophisticated, especially when you think about neural nets, which are black boxes. It's impossible to know what's going on inside of a neural net. And that's where you get these hallucinations where they have unexpected responses. So you want to hope that you've trained your neural net not to crush skulls and to have put a guardrail around it that says, no matter what, we're going to stop the crushing whenever there's a skull involved.
Got it. But would you also say from a pure kind of PhD level AI understanding, it always makes sense to keep those separate? Don't even try to put those guardrails inside the AI. It's just better.
It is better. From an architectural perspective, it is better because you want to, just in terms of developing things, to have independent layers for mission critical and for capabilities that are this sensitive to a mistake, so that if one of them goes, you know, rogue, or, you know, just does the wrong thing, that completely independently there's a separate. When you have the same thing in society, right? We teach people not to crush skulls, and we have an independent police force that stops us from doing that. And then we have a set of laws on top of that, and the Constitution and so forth, that protect that. And those independents create a level of security that I think you can't get by just hoping to.
And I think, and I could definitely be angering people who totally know about brains, how they've evolved throughout history, but I'm pretty sure, just if you think way back when, the brains kind of just did the things you need to do, smell things, eat things, taste things, and stuff like that. And then the skull adjusted, and there was more room for brain growth. So when the front part of your brain evolved, it was like an opportunity to look at what the rest of the brain is doing. So it does kind of make sense to have a little external monitor looking at the other activity. So we've even evolved that way too.
Now another thing that will come out of this is that we talk about the example of us speaking to Alexa, this Amazon.com, and that being an agent. But in the same way that you have multiple layers of guardrails that are independent, you'll also have independent agents, and each agent will have different, very concrete capabilities. There'll be an agent that is tuned for helping you plan your daily life, an agent that is tuned for helping you buy certain types of goods for grocery shopping, and perhaps an independent one for buying birthday gifts for your wife.
Yeah.
And perhaps a coordinating agent, a personal assistant that reaches out to all these other agents and performs these specialized tasks for you. So this, you know, this personal assistant, knowing you and your needs a little bit better than all those other specialists do, and coordinating them.
Yeah.
And when you do that, all of a sudden you've got inter-agent communication, and potentially a whole set of societal norms that are developed in, call it agent space, that will dictate how things interact with each other. And if your personal assistant keeps on hitting everybody up for the best price for a bicycle and never buys anything because it's just tire kicking, that might go against the societal norms that evolve. There will be sort of a level of evolution inside of this interagent space, and then as a consequence, people are going to, or other agents are going to, stop giving prices to your personal assistant agent because they know that it's just wasting their CPU cycles and not acting on them.
So, not to go too far off the rails, but could you imagine a world where these agents almost have like personalities? Like, this agent's really selfish, or that's a really friendly agent,
you know,
because maybe they had some success.
That's interesting, and yes. And, you know, one of the things that is, I think that you could run into agents that have personality disorders that are not good behaviors. So if you take a look at, for example, narcissistic personality disorder, which has a level of several very specific traits to it as to how somebody with this disorder behaves in society and is basically abusive. And there is those same set of traits can exist for a corporation. You can have narcissistic corporations.
Yeah.
And they can exist for countries where you can have countries that have gone down that path. I could see similar kind of patterns of behavior, both ones that could be mapped over to how certain humans behave and other ones that we might discover that might emerge. The AI term emerge, and need to be diagnosed and dealt with over time. But whenever you have multiple agents, be it one of them a human or both of them AI or both of them human or whatever, interacting, you've got this increasing complexity in that you've got not just the two interactors, but the interaction itself that can have combinatorial differences in how it behaves. And as a consequence, unintended emerging interactions that perhaps need to be diagnosed. It's going to be a whole new, all those kids
with agents.
Yeah, well, there's psychiatry. Now I was thinking of sociology. All those kids with sociology degrees that couldn't find a job after they graduated from high school can become AI sociologists. There might be a big need for that. You know, we got to figure out how these guys interact.
Totally. So this may be mixing metaphors, but let me know. You do hear this term AGI, which is kind of maybe a higher level. Is it really just understand how to communicate with multiple agents? Or no, that'll just be a master agent that in and of itself understands.
I don't think that's a master agent. I think AGI, which is loosely defined, is really about the G, general, the general intelligence. So most successful AI systems today are successful because they have a very limited scope as to what they do. Even ChatGPT, which feels so versatile, is very focused and very limited in its intelligence. And the G is really about creating something that can pivot from the one domain that it's a specialist in into others, and to be able to be more general in its intelligence. And I think that is different than the capabilities that we'll see in, for instance, these agents or the societal issues that'll happen in terms of the agents interacting with each other. That even if you have a bunch of specialists, none of which are a GI, if they're all interfacing with each other and interacting, you can still get societal dynamics that require these sociologists that we just described to figure out how these things should behave well with each other. And I think that some could, violate the societal norms or expectations that end up evolving in this space.
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence, not be deemed constructive parts of that society and are not interacted with as well, or maybe need to be identified and shut down even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So right now, when we think about what's happening today with different capabilities, you've got autonomous vehicles.
Yep,
that's a big one. Both drone and flying drones and driving. So that's very narrow.
Yeah.
You have, I think, the beginnings of shoppers that are searching for items for you. Maybe just the beginning of that. You certainly have intelligence in being able to summarize or to mine for information and then generate something back for you.
What's didn't you
next?
Say you got an AI call? Like there was the
yesterday
you
I
thought
did
it was a support person or a call center person, but it was actually a robot.
Yeah. That happened just yesterday, right? So there's that AI solicitor bugging me. So what's next? What's the next area that you would want to see automated?
Well, for me, it has more to do with the experience itself. Like we're still living, especially with the computer, so much like the keyboard, the mouse, and like just seeing that be something much more dynamic and flowing. So I definitely see that. And I will tell you, it was funny because we also have Alexa, you know, in the house. And I don't use it as much other than set a timer for 10 minutes, like that kind of thing.
Right,
I don't play this video, that kind of thing. But I have to say, one time I asked something, it was maybe a little bit beyond the kind of simple things I asked. And at the end, it said, John, at the end. And I had never used my name before. Obviously, it recognized my voice. Although I never said like, hey, I'm John. But somehow it did. So my point is,
wow,
I don't have a relationship with Alexa. And I know there's been some commercials, Siri, and the, you know, whether it's a famous director, and it's almost like you have an assistant, you're talking to Siri.
Yeah.
I haven't gone there, not yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I could imagine a world where, not per se, like some movies where you fall in love, like I don't see that happening. But I could definitely imagine having more of a relationship and just kind of, you know, whether it's asking to do something, hey, put add this on my calendar, or can you set an appointment to get a haircut kind of thing. I could imagine that kind of experience happening more. Although I don't do it now. And you could probably do some of it, I don't even know. But maybe I'm too old, I don't know, to take that step. But I'm not ready for Siri or Alexa to call me John and be talking to me.
Is this supposed to call you Mr. Murcutt?
Yes, exactly. Or sir.
Right, sir would be fine, right? Yeah, it's like, I don't have a relationship with Alexa, but Alexa has a relationship with me, and it's pushing the boundaries.
And how about yourself? Where do you see
I don't have any relationship with Alexa because I don't even use it, honestly. My wife
But how do you set a timer for 10 minutes?
I don't. I honestly am not using Alexa or Siri in my day-to-day life ever. I have. I've said, hey, what's the weather outside?
Right.
But I haven't made the step. Maybe I'm just too old. I don't know. But I am hopeful that, or maybe just not an early adopter, but I'm hopeful that these systems will become ubiquitous, that you always have some around to be able to interact with, and useful enough that it's not like just a gimmick, but actually, you know, adding real value. And maybe it's getting close. The things that I would really want, probably the number one thing that I would want, and maybe this is out there, is I can never figure out what to get my wife for her birthday, ever.
And you need an agent.
Exactly, right? Can I just get a piece of hardware thinking about that for me and give me something reasonable instead of some, which means you have to know my wife too.
Yes. And you have to know what the parameters are.
Yeah.
You might just come back with a big diamond necklace.
Right, yeah.
You didn't understand the parameters of my request.
Yeah. Now, lucky for me, she would make me return it. So
there you go.
Don't spend money on this.
But could you imagine a world where you are on a first name basis with Siri or Alexa?
All right, so I do not imagine a world where there is, for me, any type of emotional relationship. I love my dog. I will never love my Alexa. In terms of the machine having deep knowledge about me and knowing a lot about me, I do envision that. So it does become...
Yeah.
You know, personal relationship in terms of capabilities. Now, I can imagine that a generation or two from now, we become so ingrained into this cyber reality where they're a big part of our society that people are you know, more emotional, have deeper emotional stakes into what's happening with their agent. I don't think I'll be one of those, but I think there will be our grandchildren. There'll probably be a lot of them that have as meaningful of a relationship with something on online. It's tricky because an agent doesn't have the same type of permanence as a human. Human have, I guess, two things come to mind. They're irreplicable. You can't have two humans that are the same. And they have a limited lifespan. And I guess the third thing is they can only be in one place at a time. Agents can be in multiple places simultaneously.
Yeah.
You can copy them. And, you know, you can turn them on, turn them off. They can live forever. They can die tomorrow and be reborn the next day, all this kind of stuff. And those three things, I think, make a fundamental difference between, at least for me, how you would connect emotionally with something else. If something can be turned off and turned back on, I just don't care about it as much as something that has a specific lifetime.
Yeah.
If something can be everywhere at the same time, it's just not the same kind of relationship as being with someone who's like, we're not together, we're not together.
Yeah.
And so on. So.
Yeah. And another question, we may be hitting time, we'll probably get a heads up from Victoria. But could you imagine a world, maybe you mentioned grandchildren, and you know, who knows, hopefully we'll know our grandchildren, but let's say great grandchildren. Would you have a problem if an agent, maybe the Alexa or whatever, who knows you, they know your voice, pictures of you, they know your calendar, what you've done, it's all connected, all these things, where I personally right now, I've been kind of interested in taking pictures, you know, from my grandparents and kind of scanning them in and looking at this kind of fun. And I'm like, oh, that was my great grandmother, that kind of thing. Could you imagine a world where your great grandchildren could talk to you, not literally you, but an agent that looks like you and has your voice and have said like, hey, what were you guys doing in 2024? I was like, oh, I used to work in Woodbury, you know, kind of thing. Would that bother you?
Well,
if your grandchildren could, great grandchildren could interact with your agent as if it were you,
would not bother me.
Okay.
I'd be honored.
Okay.
They could still kind of interact with me. And it's very feasible. When you even take a look at these large language models, what they are doing is they are predicting what the most likely next word is based on everything that they've seen.
Yeah.
And you can restrict even today's models to pick the most likely next word in the voice of of somebody. So if you know, the there'll be limits because most of my interactions haven't been recorded, so you wouldn't give it.
This one is
right. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to train it in as well as you would like to. And you know, more and more of people's interactions are in, you know,
Zoom, Teams,
getting recorded left and right. So I think that's very feasible, and I think I'd love it for generations from now. I mean, it's a little egotistical, and I'm not sure that, you know, I'm not sure I care about what my great 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 grandfather would have said in a certain circumstance. I'm not sure my great 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 grandchildren will care what I thought about stuff. But it's still interesting. I don't know. Where's your head on this?
I would make me as nervous as when Alexa said John the first time. So I'm a little more hesitant. But yes, in general, like I'm enjoying this time, see all these old pictures and everything else. And it is kind of fun. And I hope it would be interesting. You're always kind of curious.
Yeah.
Like where they come from and that type of
thing.
There's
a reason why Ancestry.com is a good company.
Totally. Yeah. I do it and I get updates. I'm like, a long lost cousin kind of thing. It's fun. So I give it a 50-50 if I would do it, but I'm sure over time we're going to be more and more comfortable with something like that.
Yeah, that's interesting, because then what does time really mean if all of a sudden you're so embedded in the cyberspace that what exists today is just as real as an agent, and the agent could be impersonating what existed 100 years ago, the John Murcott of 2024.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like, it's just as real as the...
Yeah.
John Smith of 2100, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So, okay, great. This is an amazing conversation. Yeah. We could talk about this forever. We're going to take a couple of additional paths going forward. We're going to start getting into some of the technology a little bit more deeply and
okay.
into some of the business models as well.
Cool.
So I look forward to some deep dives on all of that.
Yeah.
Once you guys start questioning the existence of time, that's usually my cue to pop back in here and reel it back in.
Question the existence of time. How about that?
So thank you, too, for today's chat. I know we did cover quite a bit of territory. Ari did mention in some of the future conversations, we'll be bringing in more of the business aspect of it, you know, bringing it from more of an esoteric conversation down to, okay, what does this look like in practical day-to-day life? Is that interacting with your great-great grandfather via AI, or is there some sort of e-commerce tie-in? So thank you guys again. This was a phenomenal conversation, and we will see you guys next time.